Ways and Means. This morning we're going to be discussing staff recommendations from Legislative Fiscal Office on House Bill 5023, the Office of the Governor. Dallas Wyan represents the Legislative Fiscal Office, and Karen Segrist is our clerk for the day. So let's go ahead and begin with Dallas's recommendations. I think we should all have copies of those in front of us.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you have my memo of June 9th, and I will go through it with you. I will be making some suggested changes to my recommendations, and then I'll highlight the issues that are before us with certain of the recommendations. The recommendations are with respect to the Office of the Governor, the Arrest and Return Program, and the Community Solutions Office, or the Community Solutions Team, the Community Development Office. So, beginning with the Office of the Governor, you have before you a recommendation of a general fund of $6,889,637 and 32 positions, which is the amount of the original budget request reduced to $184,109 for the reduced inflation, wage freeze, reductions in the Department of Administrative Services, assessments in the reduced Attorney General rates. This is also $300,000 less for the co-chair's unspecified reduction to the budget of the Office of the Governor. I'll point out right now, the governor's revised budget, he offered up $200,000 as an unspecified reduction, so we have a difference there. And then he has staff here to discuss that if there are any questions. And with respect to other funds limitation, our recommendation is $960,575 and five positions, four and a half FTE, which is the original budget request, simply reduced for inflation and reductions in the Department of Administrative Assessments and the Attorney General rate.
Let me just ask you a question relative to the full-time equivalency positions. Are all of those positions presently filled?
I believe so. Yes, they are, sir.
Okay. The recommendation from Legislative Fiscal Office differs with that of the Governor's Office. Is there someone here to speak on behalf of the Governor's Office this morning relative to that? Please.
Yes.
Come forward.
Yes, Steve Scheiber.
Okay. Enter and sign in, please, Steve.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Stephen Schneider, the Deputy Chief of Staff to the Governor. Mr. Chairman, we just on the record would like to say that our position on the budget is urge the committee to look at the governor's revised budget to adopt those numbers. The office has taken significant reductions in cost savings attempts, and I just would like to go back on the record for a moment. Mr. Chairman, we have not filled a couple of the positions. As the question you just mentioned, the affirmative action position has not been filled, and I believe the assistant to that has not been filled either.
So there are two of the 32 positions that are
in. I believe those are in the other funds, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, those are other funds?
Yes, sir.
So affirmative action and the assistant
for the affirmative action office have not been currently filled.
Senator Devlin is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The 300,000 unspecified cuts, would that bring you, my understanding is that would bring you down $100,000 below the governor's revised budget, is that correct?
Or? Mr. Chairman, Senator Devlin, I believe that is correct.
So the governor's office would be prepared for a $200,000 reduction.
Senator Devlin, I believe that the actual governor's office would be taking a $100,000 cut. There are going to be some other colleagues of mine today talking about the Arrest and Return Program and the Community Solutions Team. I believe those offices as well have been targeted for some reductions.
I did.
Thank you. So that I understand, the governor's office had been offering $200,000 reduction legislative fiscal, and the co-chairs we're looking for 300,000 unspecified. That leaves us apart by 100,000. Is that your
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Calculation, Steve. And the unfilled positions, there are 32 out of the general fund, and those are filled. Those positions are presently filled.
That is my understanding, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. But that there are two of the four and a half, of the five position, four and a half full-time equivalency that are not yet filled out of other funds.
That is correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. And are those presently being interviewed for filling those positions?
It is my understanding that at least the affirmative action director is being considered at this time, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Representative Johnson?
No, sir.
Okay, thank you. Further questions, Representative Patridge?
Sure. I don't. Have we looked into? Originally, we looked at all these community solutions types of positions. At least when I was involved in the 9901 session, I'm not overly supportive of the community solutions team in total. Generally, a lot of this money was coming in from other funds, from the ODOT and other agencies. It looks like if we look at the community solutions team piece, all seven of these positions are general fund. A lot of what they're going to be doing is working with other fund agencies, like the Oregon Department of Transportation. Is there the opportunity there to help close the gap by funding some of that money through other funds into the governor's office to pay for some of those community solution team people? That was the original concept, mm-hmm. I think, when Representative Butler and I arrived in the building. I don't know if Senator Devlin has recollection on those, but when we were intimately involved in those, I think that that was how they were originally intended to be done. And if that would help us to close the gap, I think that that's something we should look at.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Patridge, if I could just mention that the office of the governor and many constituency groups are very supportive of the community solutions team. I understand that there are some issues being raised. Chris Warner, who's the director of the office, is here in the room and would urge you to ask him some of these questions specifically.
I understand the community solutions team piece, and I'm not wholly supportive of that, but I'm asking Dallas, is there the opportunity to fund some of these things
if there are seven positions there for $1.5 million that could be supported by other agencies, and it's logical to anticipate that they might be supported from other agencies as opposed to the general fund. Senator Devlin?
Mr. Chairman, do we know when they were originally contemplated to be in the Department of Administrative Services, were they going to be part of the rate-setting process, or were they separate from just general fund there?
Dallas?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the original, back in 99, used Department of Transportation fund monies. And the 9901 for 0103 biennium, that was the original intent, was to carry on with that. We found we could not use highway fund monies or transportation monies for this, and so it was switched to general fund when it was in the Department of Administration.
I have a different recollection of that. My understanding was that we couldn't use the federal funds that we thought we could match, but we could use the Oregon Department of Transportation funds.
Because some of your positions were directly related to transportation.
Yeah, and they were directly related to transportation.
Chris, do you want to come up? We're jumping over to page two of the recommendations, but I think it's fertile soil. Chris, do you have any history on that you'd like to share with us?
Sure. For the record, Mr. Chairman, Chris Warner, Director of the Office of Community Solutions. I actually don't have the kind of the history that you guys have since you were here. Certainly, the partners we've been working with in the different state agencies I know have taken, you know, they've had to take a lot of hits in terms of their staffing levels, and so in terms of an assessment on their agencies, that hasn't been discussed in the last 6 months since I've been here, nor do I understand from the last biennium as well, was they made a decision to do that out of the general fund.
Chris, can you give us a picture of what the departments presently have in community solutions folks outside of these seven positions, because I understand that some departments actually have community solutions people that are in them right now, in addition to these seven that are through the governor's office.
Mr. Chairman, basically all of the work done in terms of the field coordination are done through the general funded positions, the five that we have in the field, including myself. The Department of Environmental Quality does, and I think that request will be coming later through Senator Messerly's committee, would like to, they have been funding four positions through CST, which weren't through Community Solutions team, which I didn't have any kind of control, our office didn't have any control over. They were strictly Department of Environmental Quality employees. The reason for that was much of the work that they do is through the permitting process, and so, and a lot of what they do is charging and billing people for the permits. And so with the Community Solutions team activities, it's very hard to specifically get to one billee or permittee, so they had the need for using some general fund dollars for the DEQ positions, the Department of Environmental Quality positions. I'll put some money in a moment. But the other agencies, we have people that work on the local level for the regional community solutions teams, but they don't necessarily work full-time. They don't work for our office. They aren't actually, the coordinators are doing the coordinating. They are the agencies that bring their players to the table, and we are actually the ones that coordinate with all of the different agencies.
Representative Johnson and Representative Patridge.
Well, it's my understanding, Chris, that the positions at DEQ now are eliminated, are they not?
It is my understanding that they are, but I also understand that they were in the co-chair's budget.
Right, and budget. In order really to make the community solutions team concept work, having those DEQ positions is important, is it not?
It's very important. We found, especially, I know that you've worked with folks in the North Coast, that DEQ has done a very good job, and I think these positions have helped the agency actually turn things around in terms of getting out in front of the permitting process and working with the communities and doing some outreach as opposed to just being the regulators.
That certainly has been my experience, and that's been part of my epiphany with respect to the CST. I also will pay up, Mr. Chair. I think I'm a running tab at this juncture. That has been my experience, the very proactive work on the part of the Department of Environmental Quality, and those positions have been significant net contributors to the success in my district.
Representative Patridge?
I'm just going to say part of my initial angst with these community solutions teams is they're really doing the job that the department really, each of the departments should be doing themselves in doing outreach. And that was part of the original way this thing was sold, and it has been morphed rather substantially. Now we're putting in substantial amounts of general fund. I know we're not going to send this budget out today. I think, you know, I may even vote for the community solutions teams, which I don't believe I've done the last two sessions this time, but I think we do, you know, if you're going to keep them viable, I think, you know, Oregon Department of Transportation hasn't taken any cuts. I would imagine a lot of the time, at least in my area, that's been spent with these community solutions teams have been spent with dealing with ODOT issues and the other agencies. I'd like to see what it looks like and what we can potentially fund some of these other funds to do it so that we have some general fund savings, not only to close the gap that needs to be closed potentially in the governor's office, but also close the gap that needs to be closed overall in the budget. So.
Thank you. Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it would be beneficial at this point to just basically have Dallas check this out to see if there's any additional possibilities. I'm not so sure that the ODOT funds are a possibility. They may be in some regard, but since 1999, if we remember, in 2001, there was quite a bit of controversy about how transportation funds were using in a number of attorney general's opinions. And, well, my general read is maybe if these funds were used for a specific project, they might be utilized transportation dollars. But if they're just used for general, it might be a stretch.
Senator Devlin, it's my understanding that community solutions teams folks come and address specific problems. And you wouldn't have an ODOT person on the team without having a community solutions issue dealing with the transportation. I mean, he wouldn't be called, he or she would not be called to the table. They're called to the table when there's a community issue that deals with transportation that we seem to be hitting a roadblock. So
I understand that, Mr. Chairman. I'm just saying that I'm not criticizing the Attorney General personally. but the Attorney General's office has become quite picky in their opinions about what those funds could be used for and not used for. So.
Point well taken there. Representative Johnson?
Mr. Chair, rather than us sitting here speculating on what might or might not be permissible, I want to make sure that I understood our colleague, the good representative from Southern Oregon, correctly. If it is possible that we can use ODOT money, given the specificity of the projects that the Community Solutions team works on, that then we might be able to find not only a restoration for the $100,000 in the governor's, the difference between the two and the three, but also be able to fund the Community Solutions. So it might be the most valuable use of our time in the short term to ask Dallas to take a serious look at that, because if it solves two problems simultaneously, that might be a good outcome.
And it's my understanding as well that the Community Solutions folks within the Department of Transportation and within some of the other departments need to be able to have the ability to say yes to certain things. They need to have certain, they need to become, they need to come to the table endowed with certain powers, and it does us no good whatsoever if they come to the table with nothing more than just collection of facts and unable to help with decision making, and that's where it was really important, and I know that has benefited you up on the North Coast, Senator Representative.
Hugely, and I think that was the rationale to make sure that they were in the governor's office, carry the governor's cards, come to the table with the governor's imprimatur on them so that they can actually convene people and get to yes. And it has certainly been my experience that while most of the individual members are cautious about making huge commitments, when they do have to check back, they do so expeditiously, but they certainly have the appearance, if not the reality, of being able to bring deals to conclusion very quickly on site.
And that was a culture issue that we've talked about with Chris before, that we've got to be able to make sure that those folks within the agency recognize that there is a culture of an ability to say yes to solutions that seem obvious on the ground, but don't quite seem as obvious when we're stuck into large marble buildings in Salem. So that's going to be very important. We really probably ought to go ahead and move over to page 2 and have Legislative Fiscal's recommendation as we are discussing that. Dallas, would you like to go ahead and give your recommendation?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the first thing I'd like to point out is that we have agreement with the governor's office to budgetarily situate this officer team in the governor's office. That was an issue during the preliminary public hearings, and it was an issue even in the last session. So the governor's office is willing to house this budgetarily within his office. I originally had made a recommendation of $1,566,615. That is written there in general fund, and I would like to amend that to a higher amount. This is because of subsequent to preparation of this, we have reviewed some changes that have occurred even since the governor's rec budget to the department, and I would be recommending instead of the reduction of $127,000 some odd dollars, a much smaller reduction to the budget request because of changes that have occurred. So my recommendation would be $1,658,068, which is a $36,437 reduction from the governor's recommended budget. This is because of changes that Mr. Warner has made in his office, and the needs. They've made some adjustments. They've touched upon it during the public hearings. I didn't take that into consideration originally when I went through it, but I, after further review with the agency and the staff, I'm amending my recommendation of that. So that would be my recommendation for that and the 7 FTE. Now, again, this is in general fund, but we will go back and
okay. Let me ask about the 7 FTE. Chris, you had talked about 5 people plus yourself. Is there a 7th position that's unfilled?
No, there are 5 regional coordinators and then one person that is kind of does the communications in terms of working with all the different offices and is actually helping with the Mid-Valley region since we laid off the person that was there. And then we have the one clerical person that takes care of all of the an assistant is basically who that is.
And then you take care of one of the regions.
I do. I do the metropolitan region.
And all seven positions in there too.
Correct.
So the five regional coordinators plus a clerk plus
special projects coordinator.
Special projects. Physically, where are they all housed, Chris?
We have someone in Milton Freewater, someone in Bend, someone in Central Point, someone that works out of Portland, and then myself and the two here in Portland or Salem.
Okay. Dallas, this was the original request of 1,694,505 less. What's the reduction amount now that you've come to?
$36,437. This is because of a shift in costs from services and supplies to designated personal services.
Okay, let's move back then to the arrest and return. I've got that as item number.
Can I just make one comment? I apologize. On the community solutions team,
sure.
I'm interested to know or would like a budget note on at least having you come back if we're going to put up general fund on this to let us know what percentage of the time you're spending by agency as to resolving things through the community solutions process. I'm interested in that merely from the standpoint that the community solutions were made to address basically some fundamental institutional problems that we have in government dealing in silos. Without having any data or tracking that, we don't have the availability as legislative subcommittees to hold those agencies accountable to say, hey, you're the ones who are stopping up the work. I'd like to be able to look at that when we come back next time and be able to do that. I don't know if that's something you guys track, Chris, or not, but I would like to have you guys report periodically or at least at minimum the next legislative session let us know what's going on with these community solutions.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Patridge, I'd love to visit with you on Senate Bill 467, which actually has kind of a reporting component, which I'd like to talk to you about, and I think that could actually be very helpful.
And 467 has a reporting mechanism in it, Chris?
It does.
Okay. That may be the appropriate method as opposed to a budget note for the governor's office. But some reporting mechanism would be helpful, and I agree with Representative Patrick's concern that there needs to be some method of determining what agencies you need it from a management standpoint to find out where your log jams actually are occurring so that we can begin to examine the culture of an agency that, you know, that seems to jam up against hard spots frequently. So,
Mr. Chair, I'd like to have a budget note as opposed to 467. I still haven't made a decision. I know Mr. Gallagher and Mr. Chandler are here. I know they've worked. I know various people are working amendments on these community solutions teams. I'm not real hot about putting them in statute, frankly, and have made that expression known to people. I'm willing to look at the issue and still open on it, but I'd like the reporting piece. I'd like a reporting piece to at least be in here in this component of it in case the bill doesn't go forward or other things don't happen.
So the 467 is a statutory implementation of a community solution team?
Yes.
Okay.
Which I don't know if I'm going to
may or may not
support.
Okay. Dallas, as opposed to a budget note on an executive department, is there a method of reporting that back in a fashion if 467 does not become law?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. A couple of sessions ago, this became problematic. Also, we found an alternative was to just provide in the narrative of the budget report that the understanding that the department or the executive office would be encouraged to report periodically. In this case, we would be specified that community solutions office or whatever as part of the governor's office would provide periodic reports to the appropriate legislative body, which is generally the emergency board during session. Would that be
Mr. Chairman, I would love to work with you on giving some language that the representative can agree to. So
would the narrative in the budget report be
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we can direct the governor's office necessarily to do anything, but I would like to express somewhere in writing that that be done as an expression of the legislature. So.
Okay. Moving back into the rest and return, Dallas.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, the committee, you have before you a recommendation that has $597,009 of general fund in one position. I would like to amend that right here to $604,317, and that's because of a change in the amount of the freeze, the salary freeze. There was a slight, because of the reclass and the like, we updated the salary freeze adjustment, so the salary freeze would result in a slightly lower amount being frozen. So, this reflects in a revised amount of $57,961 for savings from the wage freeze, which is a new amount, inflation, and the AG and DAS assessment reductions. This also includes a recommended reduction of $300,000 to scale back enhancements that were provided in the 0103 budget. These enhancements in the areas of out-of-state travel and services for additional staff to escort extradited prisoners. This amount is in contention. There's not agreement. This was not in the governor's revised budget. Before we go on, I'd just like to cover the other funds. We're just recommending a slight reduction from savings and reduced inflation and gas assessments, so that the other fund limitation would be $30,170 versus the $30,226 in the governor's budget. Again, the governor has agreed to put this program budgetarily within his office. We have with us Marty Sokoff and Fran Lushenko, who can discuss the difference, if you would like, on the $300,000 and the impact. Again, this is not in the governor's revised budget. The $300,000 reduction was in the co-chair's budget.
For the record, we received a handout from the governor's office discussing some of this. I think it's from Marty. So let's go ahead and Aaron, sign in, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Marty Lynn Sathoff, the governor's general counsel, and I supervise the arrest and return program for Oregon. First, to clarify, the materials that I've handed out are in response to our presentation prior to this committee, in which you asked us for some interstate review regarding compensation and a three-year history of shuttle and non-shuttle returns by state. So that material doesn't specifically address the issue that I'm here to talk to you today about. But I'm welcome any questions you have on that material as well. I'm here today to share with the committee information regarding the proposed $300,000 reduction in the arrest and return program's 0305 budget. I'd like to remind you that the 0305 budget originally proposed was $962,278, which was actually a 25% reduction from the 0103 budget, so that effectively the additional $300,000 reduction would make it a cumulative 46% reduction from the 0103 budget. If this proposal takes effect, I want to let you know that I believe it will significantly impact Oregon's ability to maintain the current program and to address public and officer safety. To absorb the additional reduction, we have essentially two options that I can see at this time. We would need to either decrease the number of non-shuttle extraditions with two officer escorts, or fund only one officer and require the requesting public entity or agency to fund the second officer. The first option would mean that the governor's office and requesting governments, like the local governments, counties, would not be able to return those persons accused of some of our most serious felonies, such as murder, rape, sexual assault. It's that these very crimes are those crimes that require two officers to ensure both the public safety and the officer safety who is engaged in the return. Effectively, we will have to make programmatic changes in who we decide to return based on the money available to the public, to protect the public during that return. For example, we would have to decrease the number of returns but maintain public and officer safety if we limit returns to untried persons, A and B felons, nationwide. A and B felonies are murder, rape, sodomy, sex abuse, one. But crimes such as burglary, one, aggravated theft, one, racketeering, manufacture, delivery, and possession of controlled substances are non-person crimes. And while they're A and B felonies, the funding would not be essentially available to have these types of crimes returned. In addition, we would also have to continue that no parole or probation violators could be returned regardless of the degree of felony. The second option, I think, requires a little bit of a review on how we develop the two-officer discretionary policy. I'd like for a minute to ask Fran Lushankovic, she was involved in that process, to give you just a quick summary of how we got to the two-officer policy.
Mr. Chair, member of the committee, my name is Fran Lushanko, and I'm currently the extradition officer agreement administrator for the state. I've been in this position since 1987, and up until the 01-03 biennium, Oregon provided funding for only one officer per returning fugitive. The counties had the option to send a second officer, but most did not because they lacked the funding to do so. There were instances where a fugitive was not returned due to officer safety concerns by the county. Because the Oregon extradition policy returns only the very serious and dangerous offenders, like Marty mentioned, in 1999, the Oregon law enforcement agencies appealed to the governor's office and several legislators that officer safety concerns were not being met. And almost all law enforcement agencies in the state of Oregon agreed that two officers were required on most of the extraditions we were doing. This contact prompted Governor Kitzhaber to convene an interim extradition policy study group in January 2000. The group was to make recommendations on how to improve the program, examine officer safety issues, and review the current extradition policy and shuttle participation by Oregon counties. The group consisted of district attorneys, sheriffs, transport officers, corrections personnel, state budget personnel, the governor's legal counsel, and myself. And we convened over a period of 6 months with about one meeting per month. The result of this group's meeting were changes to the arrest and return program to ensure both public and officer safety. And at the last testimony that Marty and I provided, we did hand out the results of that in the 2001-2003 extradition policy.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Marty Lynn Sathoff. I wanted to also point out a couple of other external factors that are not in our control, but a reduction in the funding, and therefore a reduction in the funding will have no effect on that. For example, under Oregon law right now, there is a requirement that the governor and the superintendent of state police determine safety requirements necessary to carry out the extraditions of persons from another state. That includes identifying the number of agents necessary to do the return. Whether or not the money is $300,000 is reduced, we are still going to have to comply with state law that requires us to look at the safety of the public and the officers. Another external factor that we don't control is FAA regulations. FAA regulations generally require for certain felonies that you have to have two officers. We're not going to be able to control that with a reduction in funding. And in addition, most of the commercial airlines also, because they comply with the FAA, have the same policy that they require two agents. Again, federal agencies require two agents in most serious felony cases. Given these external factors, if the state is allowed to fund only one officer, we're going to need to make decisions about who we return. And again, I think it will be our most serious felons that we will have to make distinctions. We simply won't be able to, particularly if they're on commercial airlines, we won't have a choice. If we can't fund two, we won't be able to do that. Another option, as we said, would be to have the counties, if they request to fund. I think the problem there is that it will be self-selecting. If they don't have the money to fund the second officer, they simply won't request the extradition. In the previous Ways and Means Committee hearing, Representative Patridge asked us about our officer safety issues. In particular, he asked if public and officer safety issues had been addressed by the two-officer policy under the current level of service. We represented that it was. That response was based on the 25% reduction to $962,000, so on. I don't think I could make that same representation if we reduce this another $300,000. Thank you.
Thank you, Marty. Questions for Marty Lynn or Fran? Senator Devlin?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This seems like a question entirely out of left field, but I'm trying to understand one thing in terms of if we go away from the non-shuttle returns to the shuttle returns, who actually, since the state pays so little for the shuttle returns, who's paying the cost? And how does it really operate?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Devlin, the Oregon counties are the ones that are absorbing the cost. They are working in an informal, cooperative manner, and it's a reciprocity issue. Like if Umatilla County moves somebody for Jackson County, then Jackson County is going to turn around and move it for Umatilla. And it's extended to the surrounding states where each state will do that. So the counties are absorbing a lot of the costs of state extraditions by just participating in the cooperative
transfer. Mr. Chairman.
Follow.
So their reaction to us wanting to pay for a second officer might be, the response might be, they're already paying for this.
Mr. Chair and Senator Devlin, we might get a little adverse reaction from them.
But isn't it true, Fran, at that particular point, that the service is available? It's just that when we want a heightened level of service, that's when this additional cost comes into play.
Mr. Chair, you're referring to
the transport by air.
By air, that's correct. The counties are willing to assist in any way they can with the shuttle, and it's just that they're going to have to, you know, be a little bit understanding if the reduction does take place.
I guess in that regard, coming from a county where we live on a state border between Oregon and the rest of the states east of us. And having been involved in that with our county sheriffs in eastern Oregon, they have been very very willing, and it seems to be a good program for I think they call it the net, the vans that come in on a daily basis in eastern Oregon, that they meet those vans and shuttle prisoners back and forth, take care of all of the necessary busing arrangements to move folks back and forth and continue on with the program under Oregon Sheriff's Association, those folks that have that arrangement. I haven't heard at least at this particular point, a hue and cry from my sheriffs that system doesn't work.
Mr. Chair, the system does work, but it's only good for the states that participate. So if you have Harney County, for example, that has a particular criminal that's in Maine, the shuttle system is not going to help them, and they're such a small county, they never ask that much for extradition, and they may ask for an extradition that's a Class C felony, which is, you know, like cattle rustling, which is a big deal. And with the reduction of the $300,000, we may not be able to comply.
Even under the net?
The net doesn't reach.
It doesn't reach to Maine.
The shuttle system is encompassed by Oregon, Idaho, Washington, and Montana. Those are true shuttle states. States like California, Wyoming, North and South Dakota, Minnesota are shuttle states to a certain extent, but it's on a case-by-case basis, and it's not guaranteed. And the further you get away from Oregon, the harder it is to use the shuttle system.
Okay.
So that's why it's so important for some of these smaller counties to have access to state dollars.
To the arrest and return program.
Correct.
Representative Patridge?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Part of the issue with the shuttle system, too, is if they're bumping from long distances, that they have to overnight these people in their jails. And we all know what the local jail situations are typically, basically throughout the state of Oregon. So they have to be willing not only to transport them, but to overnight them at their jail at a cost to whatever local jurisdiction's cost is for that overnight in jail. I was peripherally involved in some of the officer safety issues in regard to what happened during the last session. I guess this does concern me. This cut does concern me based upon the progress that we've made, based upon the fact that they did have people escape previously. They don't go pick up people who aren't pretty serious offenders through this arrest and return program. If somebody was a DA and worked with police officers. I mean, we had some pretty bad felons who couldn't even get on the arrest and return out of Southern California, so local jurisdictions would pay to fly down there and send two officers to do that. I guess this is akin to me to like the Dukes of Hazzard, where Roscoe P. Coltrane chases them across the county line, and they get to sit there, and nobody arrests them because they're out of the jurisdiction of the particular county. And I don't like to see that happen, and I also don't want to send our police officers out into an unsafe situation. So I guess this is troubling to me. I also realize the gravity of the situation that we face in the budget. So I don't posit any resolution to this. I just say I think it's concerning to me, and I know it's concerning to several members who spend a substantial amount of time working very diligently.
I'm grateful for the explanation of the network, because I'd assume the network works for most states east of us, and if it does not, in fact...
Well, it doesn't even work to Southern California a lot of the time. It works to border, the border kind of maybe down into San Francisco, Sacramento area, but beyond that, it's pretty hard to get somebody.
Okay. Further questions? Thank you very much. We appreciate that. Thank you for the explanations and the information provided. Dallas, we have covered the three points at this particular point. Anything further that you want to offer relative to the governor's office budget today?
Well, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, just before we close and go on, then, with your permission, just the general direction, although it's not in work session, I will make the adjustments to the recommendations that I have proposed, if that's okay with you.
Yes, please update the June 9th recommendation so that we have the correct amount there. And I think perhaps Representative Johnson, if you would work with Representative Patridge, and the arrest and return issue is of concern.
I share Representative Patridge.
I share it as well, and because of that, and because you are on the negotiating team, I'd like to have you communicate with Representative Patridge and communicate those concerns back to our negotiating team, so that Marty Lannan and Fran's expressions of concern are noted, and that our co-chairs recognize the $300,000. Unspecified cut on the arrest and return may cripple that to the point where it would become unsafe, and I don't know that I'd be willing to do it for $300,000, particularly where in another bill we found $350,000 that doesn't endanger anyone's safety, and that's a concern to us as well. So thank you very much. If you would do that, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman. Senator
Devlin? I share your concern, and I'm not so sure that after I talk to Senator Winter, she won't share the same concern. So there may not be enough co-chairs votes in this building to overrule the committee.
I have a feeling the two presiding officers are well-versed in this particular session of the budget, if my recollection serves me well. So I think that's an issue. I think, Mr. Chair, that we really should look. I mean, that, to me, is even more highlights the need to maybe look at these other fund possibilities for these community solution teams to maybe fund some of that money and see what we can do. And maybe Chris has information on now, even on how much time they're spending dealing with the various agencies, that we can do so, step forward and do some fungibility with some degree of credibility, I guess.
Chris, at your convenience, maybe you can get with Dallas and yourself, and maybe let's...
But Chris has a big burden on his shoulders to save the entire governor's office budget. So
that was the next thing I was going to mention, Mr. Chair. You would follow up on the Representative Patrick, your concerns about whether we could shift some funds to other funds for the community solutions.
Take a good look at that. Well, this has been a subcommittee of the subcommittee, and we have had the recommendations discussed by legislative fiscal. The next time we meet on this particular budget, we will have an updated recommendation from legislative fiscal and a report back relative to community solutions teams, as well as the arrest and return program with an update of those concerns which have been expressed here today. With that, I am going to go ahead and let's close general government subcommittee for today. And let's see, we will be meeting back again Monday, as I recall.
Monday, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there will be four bills scheduled for Monday. So they're, none of them are budget bills.
Can we get those on Friday so we can...
We should have them out. They're ready to be published now, is my understanding, so we should be able to get the information on those. With that, we will go ahead and stand adjourned until our Monday meeting. Thank you. Thank you very much for coming.